Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm joined by Bruce Fein, who's a constitutional lawyer who formerly served as Associate Deputy Attorney General under the Reagan administration. He was General Counsel of the Federal Communications Commission and Research Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Covert Arms Sales to Iran, and a member of the American Bar Association's Task Force on Presidential Signing Statements. He has authored several volumes on the United States Supreme Court, the United States Constitution, and international law, and helped write the articles of impeachment for President Nixon and President Clinton. Bruce Fein is the author of Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle of Our Constitution and Democracy, and his latest book is American Empire Before the Fall. And on Friday, the House of Representatives rebuked President Obama for continuing to maintain an American role in NATO in the operation in Libya. But that was essentially vote was essentially meant to siphon off support for a much stronger bill put forth by Dennis Kucinich, which was voted down. So was this a bit of theater in terms of whether or not the Congress is really going to step up and enforce the War Powers Act?
Well, it's what you might call an intermezzo. It certainly was an effort to try to defer any clear-cut vote against the president's claim of unilateral authority to use our military offensively in Libya without a shred of congressional authorization. It's got a 14-day window of opportunity for the president to return to Congress and seek to get authorization. I don't think he could actually get the votes in the House and the Senate to pass the resolution authorizing war there. I think that's the reason why he acted unilaterally in the first place. So I think it's an intermezzo. We don't exactly know what's going to happen in the second act here. I'm quite confident during the 14 days the president will sneer at the resolution and continue on in Libya as though Congress was like an extra in a Cecil B. DeMille extravaganza and claim that the president has unilateral authority to initiate war anywhere he wishes in the name of regional stability or national security, and Congress is a spectator, and that's all.
So, Bruce Fein, 87 Republicans voted in favor of the Kucinich resolution. Now, Kucinich himself, I think his days are numbered because of the Republican governor there, Kasich's redistricting. So give me a sense of who the 87 are and what kind of movements there are afoot in the Congress, because I understand you're trying to organize a group of Congress people around the idea of the Congress reasserting itself in this area.
Well, yes, and the equally significant point, I think, Ian, is that you had 61 Democrats voting against their own president as well. And although it's not au courant these days to challenge the president in national security matters, the Republicans, at least, you could explain it, well, they're just attacking Obama because he's a Democrat. But it did have 61 Democrats going after the president as well. And there's certainly the sneering way in which the president disregarded the obligations of the War Powers Resolution. And the really outlandish, only John Yoo maybe could have written a memorandum more outlandish in asserting the presidential prerogative to initiate war anytime he thought and useful to regional stability or the credibility of the UN Security Council or any other national security purpose. That has caused the Congress to step back. Whether they'll do anything that's meaningful, one doesn't know. It's easy to carp and be captious about the president's usurpation of power. It's a different thing to stand up and do. And I actually drafted a proposed article of impeachment against the president for usurping the war power and under a mantle that's unprecedented in 235 years of the country. And what's really stunning is that virtually every single founding father voiced great fear of an executive able to go to war unilaterally. That was the case with Great Britain and all of the monarchs and emperors that they witnessed, and they understood it is the executive branch that will contrive excuses to go to war because that brings the executive all the power, the taxes, the secrecy, the footprints in the sand of time, the jingoism, and all those sorts of things. And despite the clarity of the Founding Fathers' intention, and indeed James Madison, the father of the Constitution, Thomas Jefferson, who was the crown jewel of the Constitution, was entrusting to the legislative branch the decision to go to war or not, we've now turned that on its head with the psychology of empire. I suppose, epitomized, you know, even in the legislative branch by John McCain, who says, I don't need to pay attention to the War Powers Resolution. I believe it's unconstitutional. In my view, the presidents can go to war anytime they want, use the military anywhere they want under the Constitution, you know, which is, say, an Orwellian interpretation of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11.
Well, Bruce Fine, again, constitutional lawyer Bruce Fine, former Deputy Attorney General in the Reagan administration. There is one very courageous Republican congressman, Walter Jones, who I take it's a friend of yours. He was the only Republican vote against in favor of getting out of Afghanistan, wasn't he?
Well, I'm not sure he was the only vote against Afghanistan. And the more recent vote it was just narrowly lost by, I think, three or four votes, 211, 207, not to immediately withdraw, but to require the president to set a fixed number at a much more accelerated pace of withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. And again, what shows at least there's some rumbling there as well. An amendment that was posted to the Defense Authorization Act for 2012 that was sponsored by John Conyers, a Democrat, joined by Walter Jones. It was 407-5 prohibited Obama from using any funds for ground troops in Libya. Now, even though there aren't any there now, that was a stunning vote. And because typically in the past decades, any time a president said, give me the power to national security, a Congress said, how high do you want us to jump? So there is, and I certainly will salute Walter Jones. I think he's been one of the most courageous Republicans who understands that his first loyalty and oath, and only oath, is to the Constitution of the United States and to break party ranks. And indeed, he suffered from it in part because if it wasn't for that, he'd probably be chairman of the House Armed Services Committee than simply hold them there.
So, Bruce Fine, our previous guest was suggesting that it actually would be more in the United States' interest to get out of Afghanistan, to force the regional powers there, the extent to which the Afghan war is a surrogate war between India and Pakistan, to force the Indians and the Pakistanis, bring in the Iranians, the Turks, and the Chinese, who we're actually, our troops are protecting a Chinese copper mine in Afghanistan. And our previous guest, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff, said, actually, if you force the regional powers to step in there, that would be the best route to stabilize it, because our presence there is what's destabilizing the place.
Well, that may well be true. I have no doubt that it's to our safety to remove all of our troops there. There are numerous places in the world, Ian, that are in upheaval, domestically or otherwise, that create no danger to the United States. It's a horrible commentary on human nature. But upheaval in Zimbabwe, upheaval in the Congo, where you've had 5 or 6 million die, even places, genocide in Rwanda, you know, fights between Thailand and Cambodia over borders and shrines. We don't celebrate that. They're not a danger to the United States. We have the luxury of enabling us to defend our country free from any threat to existential existence without going abroad in search of monsters to destroy. You know, the idea that we, with a $1.2 trillion national security budget, cannot defend ourselves against any kind of attack from Afghanistan or elsewhere without having troops with a perimeter of 8,000 to 9,000 miles is ridiculous. Of course we can defend ourselves. It doesn't mean the danger is zero, but it means that it's not a danger that justifies going to war, spending, you know, in Afghanistan, and $350 million a day. And to show the exaggerated fear of what we're encountering here, our own counterterrorism estimate place at 50 to 100 the number of al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. If you look the troop-to-the-enemy ratio that's in Afghanistan and applied it to the troop-to-enemy ratio that would have been true in World War II fighting the Germans and the Japanese, we would be fielding in Afghanistan, in World War II, 126 million Americans, you know, in the battle. And that just shows this absurd empire mentality that tries to exaggerate danger and make it feel that unless we're everywhere in the world, and I guarantee you we'll be in Yemen before long, that our existence is threatened and we'll no longer be able to protect our people. That's simply false, and it really is an insult to our own ability to mount a defense in the United States against anyone who had attacked.
So just in closing, Bruce Fine, if we you mentioned Yemen, where the leader has fled, he's wounded, apparently. We keep talking about it being a haven for al-Qaeda. Presumably, that will be the rubric under which we get involved. Is there another way to deal with al-Qaeda short of military invasions and occupations of countries where we're not welcome?
Well, yes, there is. And they say that the fact is you can build defenses in the United States. You don't have to be everywhere in the world in order with our military in order to defend against the attack. And again, in many respects, it's our presence abroad that creates the in continuing recruitment of persons who hate the United States because we're there and it looks like we're manipulating their country for our own interests. We're obviously not doing these things for any altruistic purpose. And it'll be, I say, that'll be the same excuse to go into Yemen. We've already provided, you know, undercover help to Saudi at that time with our Predator drones who had killed some of the so-called al-Qaeda in the Arab Peninsula previously. It wasn't as focused. And insofar as there are isolated cases in where we cannot use the customary criminal law conspiracy in order to indict and capture people like Osama bin Laden, it is legal to use the military to seek and to apprehend and indeed use deadly force against a suspected indicted felon. And you can have special operations of that sort. You might liken it to the Israeli capture of Adolf Eichmann in Argentina, bringing back for trial. That's sufficient to deal with the criminals without letting find haven abroad. Well short of war and $120 billion a year as our own domestic infrastructure is crumbling and we have a debt crisis on our doorstep.
Well, Bruce Fine, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with... Thanks again. Again, I've been speaking with Bruce Fine, a constitutional lawyer, formerly was the Deputy Attorney General in the Reagan administration, General Counsel to the Federal Communications Commission, Research Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Covert Arms Sales to Iran, member of the American Bar Association's Task Force on Presidential Signing Statements, and also helped write the articles of impeachment for President Nixon and President Clinton, and is the author of his latest book is American Empire Before the Fall. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the super secret Nevada desert place site called Area 51.
Here come the Martians, and they're riding on their Martian bike. Well, we have to find out right now, what kind of ice cream do the Martians like? Well, here come the Martians, why staying in such a cheap hotel? Maybe we should help out the Martians, looks like the Martians ain't doing too well. Martian time.